one summer in the city, back of my neck getting dirt and gritty. Bend down, isn't it a pity? Doesn't seem to be a shadow in the city.
This is Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. Summer is here. The humid days, the hot nights, the nesting robins and the walks through nature sanctuaries, the dead armadillos by the side of the road. Yes, it's all part of nature in the city. Our every few months venture through Kansas City Metro's plants and animals, critters and creatures, and joining us to tell us what they're seeing and answer questions about what you're seeing are Larry Rizzo, the natural history biologist at the Missouri Department of Conservation in Kansas City. Welcome to you, Larry.
Good morning, Brian.
And joining us for the first time, Mark McKellar. He's worked with the Nature Conservancy and the Audubon Society and many other places, and now he owns and operates the Backyard Bird Center in the Northland. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Glad you're here. So let's talk to you first, Mark, about birds, since that's your area of expertise these days. Around my house, we've already had one cycle of robins nesting in the trees and bushes, and notably on the light fixture right by my back door. What else is happening with birds at this time of year?
Well, you know, it depends on the bird status here in our area. A lot of the resident birds that never leave during the winter, you get an early jump and on the nesting season and have already fledged one batch of young birds and are sometimes starting on second and even third rounds of baby birds. So the cardinals, classically, and robins and red-bellied woodpeckers, downy woodpeckers, chickadees, black-capped chickadees, those are all common resident birds of this area, whereas our migrant birds that return from old Central America, Central Mexico, those areas like the ruby-throated hummingbirds and Baltimore Orioles are just now starting to fledge or very close to fledging their first brood. And quite often those birds only raise one batch of birds. So if you have bird feeder stations, a lot of people stop feeding birds in the summer months because they think the birds don't need it. Well, the thing that they miss out on the most is the adults bringing in these baby birds to the feeders and passing seeds to them, teaching them about the food sources. So that's going on a lot right now. I get a lot of calls from people with baby birds at their bird feeders.
So it is, we usually say don't feed the animals, but in the case of birds, it's not only okay, it's good.
It is, definitely. You know, every study that's ever been done on bird dietary needs and feeding finds that birds only get about 15% of their daily diet from bird feeders. And that's a big misconception. For a lot of people think that that's the same birds coming day, you know, minute after minute after minute at their bird feeders, where generally there are a lot of different birds. And you've got to be pretty good to tell the difference between two chickadees because they're pretty close. So and to teach a young bird of about a free food source whenever times are tough and stress is high, it's not a bad thing. So, and you know, most people feed birds because they get the enjoyment of getting to see them, and that's good.
Yeah. Larry, when people have birds nesting near their home, maybe especially if it's in an area where they're not particularly protected, I'm thinking here of I mentioned the one on my light fixture. This is right by my back door where the dogs go in and out several times a day. Is there anything in particular folks should do to be careful or to offer a little more protection?
Well, you raise a good point there, and one of the few things you probably can do is to try to control your pets if that's possible. It's not always possible, but if you can keep your dogs and particularly cats away right from a nesting bird where you know there's a nest. But other than that, sometimes they choose unfortunate places, and the lesson there, oftentimes those are not successful. Mm-hmm. And the bird learns from that. They're going to re-nest oftentimes, and they'll choose a better location next time. I recall once at an office I worked at, we had a Carolina wren that chose to nest in the bed of a pickup behind where the spare tire was mounted.
Oh,
so
dear.
That was sort of a mobile nest, which doesn't really work very well. But they'll pick a better site.
Think of all the various food sources they would then have access to. You know, it's not just birds, of course, that are nesting this time of year. And I have some friends who had a discovered, much to their very great surprise one day, a baby fawn in their front yard. Mm. What should folks generally do when they come across a baby animal? Does it necessarily need their help?
No. And the best advice is always to leave them alone unless you know for a fact that the animal is A, injured, or B, that something has indeed happened to one or both adults that are taking care of it.
Okay.
Other than that, leave it alone. Or I guess a C would be a rabbit nest that is bound to get hit by a lawnmower or something, mm-hmm. something of that nature. Otherwise, leave them alone.
Yeah, Mark?
Yeah, we get quite a few calls, especially for us, you know, about birds. And we had a young grackle brought into our store just the other day that was had been injured, hit a car in the parking lot because, you know, young birds don't fly very well, and this bird had hit, and the people immediately picked it up and brought it right in our store, and we boxed it up. And, you know, the policy, our policy has always been let nature take its course, but there are certain circumstances that we'd make every effort to try to help. But the phone calls, and just like Larry says, is that, you know, we try to encourage them to let the animal be where it is. The parents generally are not very far away.
I've been hearing a lot of talk about hummingbirds this year, and in particular, how people are not seeing the hummingbirds they're used to seeing at their feeders. Is something going on?
No, we get this call daily, and people walking in the store. If you think about a contrast of 2 years, this has to be the perfect contrast last year and this year. Last year was a drought. Very dry, very hot. Wildflowers, even landscaping, unless you watered profusely, flowers didn't do very well last year. And bird, in those circumstances, we talk about high stress. When those circumstances, hummingbirds are more dependent on hummingbird feeders, that nectar, sugar water mixture you're feeding them. This year, it's been rainy. It's been wet. I don't know about your yard, but, man, the flowers in my yard are terrific this year.
No lack of moisture there.
Absolutely. So I think this year you have had a little bit of a delayed spring because of the cool, wet weather. But now there is a bountiful supply of nectar for them with wildflowers and landscaping. So they're not needing the hummingbird feeders as much, which is a little disappointing to us. And Larry and I were just talking about this, that my rule in it saying for people is that if it's really good for the bird watcher, that usually means there's usually something bad going on for the birds, because that stressful conditions are what bring them in to your feeders more, and we get to see them. So this year, I just think it's really good for the hummingbirds.
Good reminder that it's really not all about us, right?
Right. And I was telling Mark, and here's my formula, and I'll throw it out there. I'll stand by this. I tell people that haven't had hummingbirds for a while, and it's not uncommon when they're busy nesting. But if you've had hummingbirds before in your yard and you're not now, put the feeder back out. You might even want to take it in. There's no sense having it out there just going bad. Put it back out July 15th, and you'll have hummingbirds by the 25th of July.
All right. There's the formula. That's Larry Rizzo of the Missouri Department of Conservation. We're also joined by Mark McKellar from the Backyard Bird Center up in the Northland. We'd love to hear what you're seeing in your yard, birds or otherwise. What are you wondering about this time of year? Something you've seen for the first time, or maybe something you haven't seen in a while? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. We're not just talking about birds, other parts of nature in the city. 235-2888. You can also send us a tweet. We're at KCURCST. Also, our email address is centralstandard@kcur.org. Speaking of birds, Larry, peregrine falcons spend some time in this area, too. What's going on with them this year?
Well, really good news on the peregrine falcons. It's been a very productive year. We have five local nests here around the city, and they're all producing a pretty good crop of young birds this year. We have Here's the rundown.
Okay, give us the scorecard.
Commerce Bank, which has been an active nest, Commerce Bank building downtown, they've fledged three birds down there, or hatched three. They haven't quite fledged yet.
So up on a ledge, high on the high.
Very high up, okay. Yeah, and that's the case with all these. Peregrines like a nice view.
Okay, good. So just like people.
Yeah. The American Century building down on the plaza has three young birds, and KCPNL has nesting boxes on three of their large towers at the power plants at Iatan up in Platte County, which has had four hatched. At the Sibley plant has had three hatched, and the Hawthorne plant, as of the recent writing, has four eggs that have not hatched yet.
How big a deal are these numbers, Larry? Those sound like – is this a better result than usual?
Yeah, for around here. This is about as many. I don't work with them directly, so my memory only goes so far, but this is as many as I can remember, having five active nests and a lot of young.
Yeah. And that, is it an endangered species in this area, or is it just something that we're just glad to have more of around?
Well, it was a bird that was historically endangered, and I'm not sure if it's been totally delisted at this point or not, like the bald eagle finally got delisted. Peregrine falcons are making a terrific comeback, and it's through efforts like this that these birds are most famous for being the fastest bird in the world. Most people know that. Most kids know that from school lessons. You know, they can reach speeds of 210 miles per hour and a dive. And,
wow.
And so, and like you said, it's a bird that fascinates people. We call it charismatic megafauna. It's big. They're big, showy birds, and they do terrific things. And I remember when they were first reintroduced downtown Kansas City, it was right when I arrived in Missouri about 20 years ago, and the big talk was they were going to kill all the pigeons in downtown. So not exactly the way things work, but they do feed them. The nest camera that the Missouri Department of Conservation has on the Commerce Bank building, the very first bird I saw just watching it one day brought in was a pigeon. So people can rest assured they are eating some of the pigeons in downtown Kansas City.
If they don't eat them, I'm sure they keep them nervous.
There are plenty of folks who will not be terribly disappointed with a few less pigeons in downtown Kansas City. 816-235-2888 is the number to call to talk about nature in the city today on Central Standard here on KCUR. Let's talk to Janet in Kansas City North. Janet, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Hi there. I just wanted to reiterate how it's valuable and entertaining to keep some feed out during the summer, you know, keep it all year round. I just cut back in the summer. I don't put out as much as I do in the winter, probably about half, and because some of the birds that are here in the winter are gone, and some, you know, and some of them disperse. We have, like, maybe six pairs or so and some extras of cardinals, for instance, in the winter, and in the summer it just goes down to the home pair.
That's right.
You know, so I can cut it back, and then we keep water all year round and have done that now for probably about several generations of birds, you know,
yeah,
that have learned to come. And last year it was extremely, really, really valuable.
Janet, thanks so much for the call.
Oh, you're very welcome. And also, it's turtle season, so watch out for those poor turtles across the road.
Very good.
Very good. We'll talk about the turtles. Thanks so much, Janet. What is she talking about with the home pair versus the other birds that come to your feeders?
Absolutely. She brought up a very good point. And I do the same thing that she does. I cut back on the number of feeders I have during the summer. It's mainly to do with territoriality. You know, in the winter months, several cardinals will feed side by side, but come springtime, whenever they're setting up their territories, they are definitely not allowing another male close by, another female close by. So you're going to have less birds just by territoriality in your backyard. And she brings up a good point. And, you know, another point she brought up I really love was the mention of water, food, water, and shelter. All animals need to survive. And water is so often overlooked. I'm so glad she brought that up because it is a critical point. Now, it's been a wet spring, but last year was a good example of when we really needed to provide water for them. But they always need it for bathing. And the other point maintaining bird feeders in the summer months, hot, moist weather generates bacteria more often or more frequently, more prevalently. So you really do need to make an effort to clean your bird feeders and keep them clean. Hmm. We recommend about once a month with a mild bleach solution, maybe one part bleach to 10 parts water, to try to wash those things down every about once a month.
David in Parkville has another question about bird feeders. David, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks a lot. I've really enjoyed the program, and you've already answered one question about how come the hummingbird population is down, because we used to have swarms of them, and now we have one that occasionally comes.
Not that he's down, it's just that they don't need you as much, David.
That's right. You're not jilted.
I won't take offense.
All right.
The question I have, we have a deck we live outside of Parkville and on a couple of acres, and it's kind of a wooded area, and we have five feeders. And we have Baltimore Orioles, we have the sunflower seeds, we have finch feed, we have hummingbird feed, and we have a great variety of birds, and we just love it. And we've been feeding through the summer. So we got excited, and we said, let's put up a bird bath. We thought, that'd be really just a thing. So about 3 weeks ago, we got a bird bath that mounted on the railing of the deck and set it right in there amongst all the feeders, and it's ignored. And we keep it clean, but they don't seem to be interested all in the bird bath. Are we? We have a logistic issue. Do we? Should we put it somewhere else, or is it too high off the ground, or? Why wouldn't the birds be interested in our bird bath?
All right, we know why they're ignoring the hummingbird feeder. Why are they ignoring the bird bath, Mark?
Well, I think you probably are. There's two things I generally associate with that. One is what we've already been talking about. It's been a cool, wet spring, so there's a lot of natural sources for water out there for them, and the other is cover. A bird is bathing, it is quite often very distracted. It's not able to watch for predators as well because it's flopping and everything. So they do like a bird bath that it has good amount of cover, especially this time of year. And if they have an opportunity to bathe or get their water source from somewhere that's more concealed, they're probably getting it from there. Now, as the summer dries out and those smaller sources of water dry up, your bird bath, I think, will become more popular. But if you can, I would position that bird bath as close to cover as possible. I mean,
okay.
And see if that doesn't help for you. Now, is your bird bath shallow enough? That's another question. I don't know how deep it is, but you can always put in a nice flat rock in it so you get different levels of water in there, too. That might be helping you.
Okay. And I think, you probably hit on the problem. We have a pond that's probably 50 yards from the house.
Sure.
So they may just not need it.
Yeah. I mean, we may be competing competing with a more attractive bathing area.
All right. David, thank you so much for the call.
You bet. Appreciate your show.
816-235-2888 is the number to call. We'll take some more calls in a minute. I want to talk about something else. There was an article a couple of weeks ago in the paper about different places you can get nature. We're assuming that everyone has a yard where lots of birds flock to, but there's several great places not too far from the very center of Kansas City where folks can go to see a more natural element out in the real world. One of those that was mentioned is a place I guess you used to work, Mark, the Burr Oak Woods Conservation Area in Blue Springs. Where else can folks go, Larry?
A place I always recommend is right here in Swope Park in Kansas City. And a lot of people aren't aware there's an active organization. It's a mountain biking organization called the Earth Riders Trails Association, ERTA. You can look at their website, and they have constructed an incredible network of trails in Swope Park. They're getting a lot of use by not just the mountain bikers, but hikers as well, and it's in a beautiful setting. And there is actually a network of trails that runs all the way south along the Blue River in various stages, out by Minor Park, for instance, and out towards State Line, and it's a really nice setting.
Wow. The Burr Oak Woods Conservation Area in Blue Springs, what would folks find there?
Oh, tremendous habitat there. There is a nature center, an interactive nature center for the whole family to enjoy and get close-up views, but the hiking trails are tremendous. There was just that article about the Bethany Falls Trail that it was featured in. That article was terrific. I've spent a lot of time on that trail when I first moved to Missouri. So lots of different habitat, lots of nice trails that wind you through some great area out there, and not too far out, just Blue Springs.
Yeah. I'm gonna plug one more, and it's a different kind of habitat and setting. It's unique to Kansas City, or the Missouri side anyway. There's the Jerry Smith Park out in South Kansas City, out south of Martin City, where we have been working on prairie restoration for over 10 years, and has a nice trail that loops around the prairie. The prairie was burned this past fall, and the year following burns is generally very showy with wildflowers. So it's really going to be attractive this summer, and a lot of things already starting to bloom. So people might want to check that out.
You don't have to be in the forest to get some natural beauty.
And two up our way in the Northland, the Parkville Nature Sanctuary. Another name you'll find for it is the White Aloe Creek Conservation Area, which is from the Conservation Department is part owner of that property. And that's
right off the campus of Park University.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Former campus property, part of that place. So nice hiking trails. We go bird watching there a lot every spring. It's just real easy to get to. If you know where the little health department building is, you park right down there. Another place is near and dear to my heart. Over in Liberty is the Martha Lafitte Thompson Nature Sanctuary. They have over 5 miles of hiking trails there with prairie and forest and a beautiful creek running through the property. What is it? Brush Creek.
Rush Creek.
Boy, I totally forget. Running through the property. So another terrific place to get out and enjoy nature.
Love to hear your favorite places in or near the city to go find some nature. 816-235-2888. Laura in Kansas City, Missouri. Welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well, thanks.
My name is Laura. I just wanted to make a comment about some of the birds of prey that have been circulating through Kansas City here in the last many years.
Sure. What have you been seeing?
Well, it started about 10 years ago. I used to live in an apartment complex way down in downtown, and I was up on the 8th floor, so I had a really good view. And I happened to look across the street one day, and I said, "That's an awfully big pigeon." Then I looked closer, and I said, "That's not a pigeon." I got out the binoculars. It was a red-tailed hawk that was part of a nesting pair that apparently decided to build a little nest over on the Broadway Bridge. And that was 10 years ago. And ever since then, I keep seeing more and more red-tailed hawks, peregrine falcons, all kinds of things. And so I started doing some more research on the subject, and come to find out, you drive north up 29 Highway, it's about 100 miles, and you come across this place called Squaw Creek. They've got bald eagles, nesting bald eagles up there.
Okay,
so
some good.
You really want to see some birds of prey.
Good tips for our listeners, Laura. Thanks so much. Larry?
Well, you don't, by all means, recommend. Everyone should visit Squaw Creek National Wildlife Refuge at certain times of year in particular. But for nesting bald eagles or local bald eagles, you don't have to go that far. We have them on Blue Springs Lake and at Longview Lake here locally, too.
Okay. Don't have to drive 100 miles up yep. I-29. Let's talk with Richard in Kansas City, Missouri. Richard, welcome to the program.
Thanks. I'm so glad you all do this program. It's just great.
We're glad to have you.
I had a separate question I'd like to ask, but real quickly, that caller about the bird bath.
Yeah.
I think I've also read, just as a caution, that if you have cats outside or cats in your neighborhood, that bird baths shouldn't be near cover because cats will hide.
Because you're basically just luring the birds so that your cats can kill them.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
And even cats without claws anymore can snag a bird. They're just amazingly fast, but...
And Mark McKellar is nodding along in agreement as you're speaking.
Absolutely. Cats indoors, yeah. Where they belong. Yep.
So tell us your question.
My quick story is I was working in a yard down in Olathe here a while back, and it's surrounded by a wooded, heavily wooded area. And I was doing some gardening, and it was getting late, almost 9 o'clock. I was working till last light, and I kept hearing this odd squawk, kind of a weird squawking sound that I'd never heard before, and I couldn't see where it was coming from, and there were some trees in the way, and it went on for so long, I just thought it was some weird bird I'd never seen before. And finally, I walked around the corner where I could get a view, and there were two big owls up in the top of a dead tree. And I guess they're horned owls because they had the little ear-like looking tufts, you know? And they were squawking at each other. They were sitting in the big limbs of this dead tree a few feet from each other, and I saw one of them kind of buzz the other one. He'd get off his perch and flutter at the other one and then go back and sit down. And they did that for like 20 minutes. They just kept squawking at each other, this kind of weird squeal. They weren't hooting or doing anything like that. And then finally they quit and they disappeared. I guess they went off hunting for the night. But I just wondered if y'all are familiar with that and if they were just complaining to each other, being close.
Larry Rizzo, was it an old married couple?
So this is Richard. This is a first. I'm going to imitate this call here for it.
Oh,
how's that? Was that what they were doing?
Do it again. Yeah,
that's it. Yeah, those it again, Larry. No, that's probably enough.
Those are juvenile great horned owls, and that's a begging call. It takes owls quite a while to gain full independence once they fledge, and they're saying, "Feed me." And that's a great one to bring up because I have had very experienced birders who have no idea what that sound is, who hear that sound at night. It's a real mystery.
Well, thank you.
It was neat.
Richard, thank you not only for the call, but for getting Larry to make owl sounds on the air. Appreciate it.
Keep that recording.
We will. We'll send it to his family. Yeah, Mark.
Well, one of the things I'm excited about here and about all these attention to birds of prey, because they're so critical, such a critical part of our environment and the balance of nature. And one of the things that we're seeing is no accident, and that is an increase in red-tailed hawks and the increase in peregrine falcons, the increase in great horned owls. And it's no accident. Everybody knows that that the bald eagle story with DDT and the effect it had on them, very few people think about that when it applies to all the other birds of prey. And a lot of this has to do with these birds are finally out of the woods from this chemical that was so destructive to these birds. And not only bald eagles have made a miraculous recovery, but these other birds as well. So that all adds into, why we're seeing these birds so much more frequently, which is a terrific thing.
We've been talking about birds, but of course there is other nature going on in the city. Since we've mentioned it in our promo for the show, I don't want to get away from this. Is this a silly question, but are there more armadillos by the side of the road than usual this year?
I have noticed a number. My office is out at the James A. Reed area in Lee's Summit off 50 Highway and Ranson Road, and there have been three or four different individuals killed right along 50 Highway there, which tells me if we're seeing those that there are many more live ones out there bumbling around that we're not seeing. So, and that is the only evidence I've seen of them in Jackson County in about 10 years. About 10 years ago, I saw one on I-470, and I thought, here they come.
Yeah.
And then I didn't see them again.
I mean, this is probably a silly question, so bear with me, but why do armadillos cross the road?
To get to the other
side. I figured that was the answer. I mean, is there more? Why are they not staying in what would obviously be a safer place for them?
Well, they've been on a historic march northward for quite a long time now. They first showed up in Missouri, probably right post-World War II or somewhere in that neighborhood. The funny thing is, if you do some research on it, you know, it's a cultural icon in the state of Texas. Mm-hmm. They're actually relatively new even to Texas. They've been coming up from Central America into North America for a long time. And in Missouri, it was often thought, well, they'll stick around the Arkansas border counties and they'll never get farther north because it's too cold, and they've constantly been telling us otherwise.
Right. We had a caller earlier mention the turtles on the road, too. Is there a thing that people can do other than drive slowly and watch carefully?
Avoid them if you can. Obviously, we don't encourage anybody to do anything dangerous when you're driving, and definitely don't jump out of your car and go out into a busy highway. Unfortunately, nature's going to take its course. It has to. But if it doesn't take a small deviation to avoid running over them, obviously we want you to do that. And if it is a safe place and you wanted to get out and try to get them across in the direction that they're going, move them. But most traffic situations are not such that we encourage that at all.
Sure.
You know, we just got to let the guys do their thing.
But that is an okay way to interfere with nature, is to redirect the turtle to a safer place.
I always tell people, now the main ones we're seeing, you see several species, but right now you have snapping turtles out on the roads looking for places to lay eggs. But then, particularly in more rural areas, they're generally box turtles. Vehicles are a terrible cause of mortality on box turtles. I mean, a really significant hit to their populations.
How would I know the difference between a snapping and a box
turtles? Are the little terrestrial turtles, the land-dwelling turtles. They're big as your hand. And people erroneously call them tortoises a lot, but they live on the land. But I would just say when you're driving and you see one on the road, just let that be a warning to you to watch your speed, pay attention to the road, because if you see one, you're probably going to see more.
816-235-2888 is the number to call with your questions about nature in the city. Michael in Overland Park, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. When will the monarchs arrive, and how is it that you can get them in? We've planted milkweed. We've got a little butterfly garden so far. We just have plastic butterflies up. Is there a special time they come in? Do you have to put milkweed in profusely? Can you get native milkweeds? What's the key there?
What's the trick to attracting non-plastic monarch butterflies, Larry?
Well, you're doing the right things. First of all, they migrate through here any time. Can be late August, early September, even into October. It varies a little bit. But generally, I'd say around Labor Day. You can start watching for them. But, yeah, the milkweed is the larval food source, and there are outlets of nurseries that sell the native milkweeds. One in particular, if you have a wet area or damp area, the one called swamp milkweed that they really love, big pink-flowered one. But any of the milkweeds will work. But they also want nectar plants. So I have a native garden that has prairie species in it, and one they really like are there's one called rough blazing star. It's one of the liatris that blooms about then. But any of the aster-type group of flowers will also attract them that time of year. So you're looking for things that bloom about Labor Day, mix them in with some of those milkweeds, and you'll get some.
Speaking of insects, the lightning bugs or the fireflies seem to be a little late this year. I haven't seen any yet.
Right. I agree. And I think this is all a product of that cool, wet spring. Everything is a bit delayed, and I just think it's just a matter of time. You just got to be patient this year, and they'll start blinking away soon.
And then, of course, we've been hearing a lot about cicadas because of the 17-year, the 13-year cicadas, mostly on the East Coast.
Out east, yep.
We do have in Missouri those long-term periodic cicadas, but not this year, right?
Right, although I found one recently.
Uh-oh.
Very lonely one.
How do we explain that?
out of the prairie at Jerry Smith Park, as a matter of fact. And it was very unusual because it's known to have a few stray ones, to find them a year early or a year late. But this is exactly 2 years in between the next expected cycle.
Which doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. But that happens occasionally. You get a few odd ones. But we have the ones that are out every year, the common one called the dog day cicada. That's that monotonous drone that comes from the tops of the trees. I haven't heard any yet, but shouldn't be too long.
Something to look forward to.
Very summery sound to me.
Yes.
And then, of course, there's the cockroaches. And we've been seeing some of those out and about this year, too.
Again, I think they do like moisture. And a wet spring would play into their wheelhouse and make it easier for them to reproduce and be more successful. So, yeah, I think the wet spring is the source of that.
816-235-2888 is the number to call with your questions about nature in the city. We asked earlier places you can go for nature close to the city. And Peter from Kansas City, Kansas is on the line. Peter, thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to give a quick shout out to Wyandotte County Lake Park.
Oh, absolutely.
I think it's one of the most underutilized, and especially in the wintertime, after a snow, they close those roads, and you can hike old deer trails or hike the roads once they've been closed off. We snowshoe out there. It's just really a gem of a place.
It's a pretty park, yep.
I agree 100%. I love going out there. It is, and your term underutilized, sometimes that's what makes it so wonderful.
Exactly what you want.
Some of the best timber in the city, I think.
Yep, I totally agreed. Yeah.
Well, I hope you haven't spoiled it, Peter, by telling everyone
that. All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate
Thank
it.
You. Let's talk to Michelle in Overland Park. Welcome to the program, Michelle.
Yeah. Hello, everyone. Hi. I have a question about suburban red foxes. I live in the heart of suburban Overland Park, and I've seen raccoons and possums and all kinds of wildlife, but evidently we have a visiting red fox. And first I'd like to know, do the vixens call or is it the males that call, the kind of screechy call in the middle of the night?
I suspect both of them do, Michelle. It's a very odd sound, and I'm not going to try to imitate
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
I
was going to say.
I don't think I could.
Well, we were blasted out of bed about 3 o'clock one morning, and by that sound. And I didn't know what it was, and I saw the fox in the backyard, so the next day we went and searched on the internet, and we're pretty sure that's what it was. But I'm wondering about their habits. I mean, are they common to Overland Park? Are they common to suburban areas? And are they, you know, what's the possibility they're burrowing and having kits in our yard?
If they're there this time of year, they probably already have done that somewhere. Right. They're really a lot more common than people realize in and around the city. For years, there have been red foxes around along Brush Creek, along the big older cemeteries in town and areas like that. They do quite well. They'll live in drains, drain pipes, but they'll dig their own dens as well. And a lot of times they're feeding they'll feed on, of course, on wildlife, rabbits and things like that, but they'll also, if you leave cat food out on your deck, they know where to find those too.
Right, so. Right.
Which isn't, we don't recommend, we don't intentionally feed them. You don't want them to become tame, but No, it's actually fairly common. They're pretty secretive, so you don't always see them around, but they're there.
Well, this one appears to be pretty bold. She or he will jump the fences, cross the front yards at 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon with people out front.
Wow, that is unusual. I have seen that before, though.
She has had a couple of encounters with our cats, but she hasn't attacked them. She just yells at them, and they run away.
Who wins in the cat versus fox encounter?
If it's my cats, the fox wins.
Yeah. All right.
Depends on the size of either.
So be careful there, Michelle. Thanks so much for the call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
So before we are done here, gentlemen, I want to note something that I'm sure most of our listeners are well aware of, that frog gigging season starts this Sunday. Frog gigging was not something I was familiar with, but in fact, Missouri hunters can take up to 8 frogs a day if they have the proper permits. What in the world, Larry, is frog gigging?
Well, it's a very predatory activity with man versus amphibian with a pointed stick, basically a little spear, a little miniature pitchfork, and you shine lights in their eyes and approach them and jab them with that, or you can grab them with your hands. I used to actually do a lot of that, and bullfrogs are one of the more delicious wild meats you can eat.
I also saw on the Missouri Department of Conservation website that you can use a crossbow, but I'm confused about how that works with the frogs, so we'll have to save that question for another time.
Yeah, I don't think that's too practical.
No. Larry Rizzo is a natural history biologist at the Missouri Department of Conservation. Mark McKellar is owner and operator of Backyard Bird Center in the Northland. Gentlemen, thanks both of you for being with us today.
You bet.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you. Enjoy it.
You can subscribe to our podcast. You can hear this conversation again. You can access any of our previous Nature in the City shows or any other show from the Central Standard page at kcur.org. Tune in tomorrow as we explore the closing of the Kansas City Board of Trade. Stay tuned now for Up to Date. It's next with vitamins and also excessive speeding tickets in Mission, Kansas. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton. We had help from Ross Steinmetz. Our special music today at the break was Summer in the City by Love and Spoonful. I'm Brian Ellison. This is KCUR.